Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison. On behalf of us here at Scots Language Radio and Ither Bits, a happy new year to you. Welcome to this programme that gings for Ither programmes a fear to go. In this edition, 2015 has been designated the Year of Food and Drink, and we're all in favour of that. We join award-winning chef Neil Forbes in his kitchen in Edinburgh for a wander through some of the Scottish recipe books. We hear fae twa crofters fae Orkney and Shetland about looking after their special island lamb. After a furl o' awards and nominations last year, we hear that Scots singer and Scots language ambassador Robin Stapleton has got planned for this new year. And we gang into the land of Burns to catch up with Professor Jerry Carruthers for the Burns Study Centre in Glasgow. As is ever the case, we'll nae hang aboot, we'll just hang in. Starting with Burns, in this month, and the whole world celebrates his memory and his work. It's been howked o'er in every other Burns supper, wandered aboot in every immortal memory, and delved into in ilka other lecture room ow the globe. But fit is it that marks this poet, fae Ayrshire, a humble ploughman, according to the scripts, fit is it that marks this man acknowledged and revered our world? A question I put to Eno Scotland's recognised experts on the subject, Professor Jerry Carruthers, fae Glasgow University and co-director of the Centre for Burns Studies.
Basically, I think he's one of those writers who has huge facility with language. In one sense, it doesn't matter that it's Scots, it's just ability in language. But of course, in another sense, what is very important is his brilliance in Scots.
Now, if he had written in English, would he have been as brilliant? Would he have been so revered?
Potentially, he might have been as great a writer in English. I think there's a myth that Burns wrote well in Scots and badly in English. I don't think that's true, especially if you look at Burns's letters. But nonetheless, cometh the hour, cometh the man, and there's something about late 18th century Scotland, Burns writing Auld Lang Syne at a time of emigration, Burns appearing in Enlightenment Edinburgh, Burns coming along with an apparently newfangled Scots idiom. All of these things are kind of examples of happenstance. So it's often the case, people appear on the scene at the right time, they're very talented, but circumstances add to the greatness.
Okay, you've had a long experience with Burns poetry. Give me your favourite one. Just a snippet of your favourite one.
Oh, I wouldn't be able to remember anything at this point. I mean, my favourite Burns poem is A Poet's Welcome to His Love-Begotten Daughter, because it's tender and savage at the same time. This is one of Burns's great hallmarks. My own favourite lines, I think, you know, they're a bit mischievous. They're a bit of a chat-up line from Green Grow Their Ashes, where Burns says of gods or Mother Nature, her prentice hand she tried on man, and then she made the lasses. Oh, I think that, in a nutshell, tells you a lot about Burns facing towards different audiences at the same time. It tells you a lot about Burns, crafty, craftsman-like poet and songwriter.
But you mentioned there that the savage and the tender, that's very much part of Burns as well. I think that's maybe part of why we like him so much, because we identify that he's got flaws.
Oh yes, Burns isn't slow to identify his own flaws. He will write poems to God, he will write letters to friends saying, I'm a miserable sinner, I'm not a very moral person, but he aspires to be good. And also what he does do is use his own bad experiences and other people's bad experiences to shine a light on human nature. I'm not saying that he simply has some kind of moral agenda, but he's not scared to show immorality, and that's us on the first step towards a kind of moral agenda.
Aspirations. What would you like to see done in Scotland? Do we know enough? Do we know enough about the life of Burns and the man himself?
People like me will always want people to know more and to appreciate more Robert Burns, his life, his work, his songs, his poems. I think we're headed in the right direction. There's an international scholarly community, including in places like England, who are more and more appreciative of Burns. But as ever, there's a lot of work to be done yet. There's a lot of prejudice still to be overcome. There's a lot of nonsense about Burns as a writer of doggerel. Burns occasionally did write doggerel, but mostly he didn't. And upwards and onwards, I'm optimistic, but as ever, we always want more.
Always want more. Professor Jerry Carruthers from Glasgow University. Appropriate time to hear a Burns song. This is Jean Redpath singing Corran Riggs.
It was upon a Lammas night when corn rags are bonny. Beneath the moon's unclouded light I held a watty Annie. The time flew by wi' endless heed, till tween the late and early, with small persuasion she agreed to see me through the bally. Corn rags and bally rags, corn rags are bonny. I'll never forget that happy night, though among the rags me Annie. The sky was blue, the wind was still, the moon was shining clearly. I set her down where I gaed well among the rags o' Bally. A kinder heart was all my ain, I loved her maist sincerely. I kissed her out and out again among the rags o' Bally. Corn rags and Bally rags, corn rags are bonny. I'll never forget that happy night among the rags me Annie. I locked her in my fond embrace, her heart was beating rarely. My blessings on that happy place among the rags o' Bally. By the moon and stars sae bright that she on that door sae clearly, she aye shall bless that happy night among the rags o' Bally. Corn rags and barley rags, corn rags are bonny. I'll never forget that happy night among the rags me
Redpath singing Corn Rags, one of my very favourites. And this is another appropriate point to introduce my regular studio companion, our resident rummler and music maker, Steve Byrne. Steve, you heard what Professor Jerry Carruthers had to say about that Max Robert Burns, not only nationally celebrated, but internationally celebrated. Bit some of your own furls on this.
Well, I suppose, Frieda, it's one of the things folk speak about with Burns is that he, some of the sentiments he expresses are universal. I mean, you just hate to think of some of the things that we use day to day. Would some power the gift to gie us to see ourselves as others see us? It would frae money a blunder free us in foolish notion. Mm. I mean, I love the first half of them. It's telling the amount of folk that have actually translated Burns over the years. My wife's from Germany, and so we have an interest in poets and I think for that part of the world, and they translated Burns in the 19th century already, you know, nae that long after he was dead. And Ferdinand Freiligrath is a brilliant poet for Germany, who actually translated A Man's a Man into German around the time of the 1848 revolutions. And it was that controversial at that time that he had to actually leave Germany. So it kind of tells you about, you know, some of the themes of Burns's time.
Dangerous, but he wasn't afraid to say it.
Indeed, and he had his finger on the pulse in terms of world events. And
politically motivated.
Exactly, aye.
He had this tenderness, but he was sharp, and he could cut with a knife right through only the sentiments that was email being felt at the time, I suppose.
Indeed. And again, the kind of that whole equality thing, and you know, kind of in the referendum process, a man's a man came to the fore again, because of things like a prince can mark a belted knight, a marquis, duke, and all that, but an honest man's a boon as might, good faith he munna for that. I mean, it's the universality of that. You can't afford it.
Craftsmanship.
Really.
Just the hell idea that he's sitting there looking at pulling all these words together. And as Professor Carruthers said there, there's often a supposition that he wasn't as good in English as he was in Scots.
Well, I think that's a bit of a misunderstanding, folk, here as well, because Burns wrote an awful lot in both English and Scots, mm-hmm. in a particular register of Scots as well. I mean, some of the way that he used Scots in his poetry wouldn't have necessarily been the way that he'd have spoken doing in Ayrshire.
He knew her favours, of course, Westland Winds.
Indeed.
Written in English.
And when he was quite a young man as 16
well. 16-year-old.
And so folk overlook that, and they think that he's primarily a Scots poet, when he's actually, you know, he's a Scottish poet that writes in both English and Scots, and could do both to great effect. And any of the things that folk had up as, you know, the kind of bastions, if you like, a Scots song is Auld Lang Syne. And of course, mm-hmm. it has Scots in it. But when you come to that final verse, I mind hearing Dr. Fred Freeman speaking about it a time. That final verse is a combination of Scots and phrases for kind of the Restoration period and older poets that Burns was aware of. So it's no pure Scots by any stretch of the imagination.
And I think it's appropriate that we're on this theme about the twa languages, when we've just finished launching the ambassador scheme.
Aye.
And we're going into schools, and we're saying, look, you can speak English, happy, but, you know, be aware that we've got this other language, it's called the Scots language, and we can speak both.
Indeed, and that's the skill, actually, being able to switch between the twa.
Right. Another song now for the new CD brought out by Ian Green on the Green Tracks label. Steve, tell us more about this.
Well, this is part of what Green Tracks call their Celtic Collections series, which are kind of mid-price CDs that they bring out every so often. It's a compilation that's called Favourite Scottish Songs, and the subtitle to it is For A' the Bairns and Abody Else.
Great.
And it's been put together by the piper Hamish Moore, who was keen to get some of our best Kent songs in Scots to begin
into
with.
Schools.
Into schools, aye.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a Gaelicine as well, but this is the Scotsine that's just come out.
And this is Far Singing Fit.
Davy Steele, Far Were As We Loved on this programme, and he's singing a classic version with his band Kulbeg of My Love Is Like a Red, Red Rose.
Here it is.
My love's like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. My love's like a melody so sweetly played in tune, as fair thou art, my bonny lass, so deep in love am I, and gone dry till all the seas gone dry, my dear, and the rocks melt away the sun. I would love thee still, my dear, till the sun time we run, say fare thee well, my bonny lass, and fare thee well. while, and I would come again, my dear, though it were 10,000 miles, though it were 10,000 miles, my dear, though it were 10,000 miles, I would come again, my dear, though it were 10,000 miles.
Great singer, great song, Davy Steele and Cole Beg. My love is like a red, red rose. Well, another fine singer, fairly new in the scene, is Robin Stapleton, Feistr an Rar. And Robin has had an ava busy year last year, winning the BBC Young Trad Singer of the Year and a hell lot of other accolades for Bi, that you'll hear about in a minute. She told me how the singing started for her.
I started singing when I was really wee. I was about 7. And I'd started singing in the school and in the church, and there was these Scott song competitions, and there would be Burns competitions, and I entered, and folks started to realise I had a good voice, and so I went in for the competitions and I won, and that was the start of it. That was the start of the encouragement and my love of Scott song, and it just went on from there.
Okay, you've just finished an amazing year in the life of Robin Stapleton, 2014. Mm-hmm. Tell us half what's been happening to you in 2014, because it's quite a bit.
Jeez, well, it started at the beginning of the year when I won the Young Traditional BBC Scotland's, BBC Radio Scotland's Young Traditional Musician of the Year. It's a tongue twister. I won that back in February, and ever since then, things were turned around, and I was getting loads of opportunities all over the place. I got to sing for the Commonwealth Games. I got to sing, record a song for the big baton relay. And then I was singing with an orchestra. I mean, that was a dream for me.
Whereabouts was that?
That was at Glasgow Green for Proms in the Park.
Proms in the Park. What song did you sing there?
I sang Bonnywood Hall.
Bollywood Hearts,
and it's a beautiful song, and I've been singing it for a while now. But I sang that with the orchestra behind me, and it was an unbelievable atmosphere. It was scary, but I was the thing I was most worried about was the dress, because I didn't really know how to hold myself in a ball gown. You know, I was kind of a bit awkward. You know how to? I took it off as soon as I got off the stage. Pulled it off and I had my jeans back on because I wasn't really... But apart from that, it was nice, and I really enjoyed it. And it was so nice to be singing a song for just nearby, you know, and from up in near Cote Bridge. That's where the song's originally from. And so being in Glasgow, singing that in a traditional song with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra was a bit surreal.
And then you went down to Radio 4 to do something. What was you doing there?
How long was it? About 5-6 weeks ago, they phoned me up for BBC 4, and they said, oh, can you come to London in a few days? We were wanting you to sing for a live kind of production. It's like a Christmas special show that they put on Christmas Day, and then they bring it out again on New Year's Day. It was for Ian Hislop, you know, the one of Have I Got News For You, and he was choosing all his favourite poems and sketches and sayings and just quotes and that, and they were absolutely brilliant. He's such a clever guy with so much knowledge of different like literature, and he chose some really magic pieces of writing, and he got them read by actor, Oscar winning actor Jim Broadbent. And the lassie out of, what do you call it, Black Books, Tamsin Gregg. She's hilarious. She's so funny. And she was reading as well. And then I got up in the middle and did My Love Is Like a Red, Red Rose.
And did they like it?
They liked it a lot. They did like it. And I think Ian really liked it because his dad was Scottish and that was the... That was a connection there. So.
Did you Ken? You had an appearance briefly on the Music Awards.
I did hear about that. I got a very confused phone call from Simon Toomer saying, "Robin, I just saw you on the BBC Music Awards." So he says, "It was a close up of your face for about 5 seconds, but nonetheless, you know, it was."
We can't, it was you.
It was definitely me singing Jock Cox Adventures. It was. Yeah.
That was the one that, of course, you won the competition with.
I sang that in the final back in February.
That's right. Right, now, here we are at the start of 2015. Mm-hmm. What's the plan?
Well, I need to get this album out because I'm really keen to make an album. I've made it, I recorded it with some fine musicians. Kristen Harvey, the fiddler. Alistair Ian Patterson on the piano, a great guitarist, Hajime Takahashi, and Stephen Heffernan on the box, and the five of us recorded this album a few months ago, so I'm looking forward to just getting it out there and having folk hear it and enjoying it and touring it and, you know, travelling about and...
Promoting it
and singing.
What's it called?
Fickle Fortune.
Good title, Fickle Fortune.
Yes.
Because I kind of think that your life has been... According to fate, and sometimes luck, and sometimes fortune.
Yeah, you never ken what's coming round. You know, you don't know what's for you, and I think that's what I could hear in the songs as well. I could hear that these women in one action or one moment, their lives are totally changed. That's it, and everything changes, and it's been like that for me. Like one minute I've been doing this, and the next minute, and.
You're wearing a great langoon and singing with an orchestra.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to ask you about was just your recent award. You were appointed an ambassador for the Scots language. Mm-hmm. How important is the Scots language to you?
It's extremely important to me. I mean, it's something that if I hadn't been brought up with such a rich dialect and fantastic accent and you know, in my local area, Stranraer, I wouldn't have had that grounding that's really seen me through this, you know, Scots song, and it's been a great help to me and growing up in an area with that, and I love speaking it and I love hearing it, and I'm very proud of it, and it's something that into the future I'm very pleased to be able to encourage other young people to use the language. And
be proud of it.
Yeah, and get people thinking about it. Get people really thinking, you know, thinking more about using it and encouraging a more positive attitude amongst all different generations towards the Scots language.
The ambassadors are asked to adopt a school. Mm-hmm. The schools adopt it. Mm-hmm. Have you chosen your school yet?
I was a bit brave and I chose the high school in Stranraer, which is a pretty big high school. I just remember, you know, being back at school and how much more I would have been enjoying a subject and engaged in a subject if it had been through medium of Scots or if there'd been that connection there, I would have loved it. So,
yeah. Well, I think the school's going to be lucky, and we'll catch up with you later on in the year, see how you're getting on as well.
Great.
Robin, congratulations again.
Cheers, Rita.
Robin Stapleton. This is a song Robin sang at the proms in the park in Glasgow, as she mentioned there, called Bonnywood Hall, from the CD of the TMSA Young Trad Tour 2014, Bonnywood Hall.
Down by yon green bushes, near Calder's clear stream, where me and my Annie so often have been. Oh, the hours they flew past us, right happy were we. It was little she sought that a soldier I'd be. And it's farewell to Annie, for I must away. The king he needs soldiers, and I must obey. But if Providence proves kind love, then when I return, I will wait with my Annie near Calder's clear burn. On the 14th of August, our regiment was lost, and a ball from the enemy our lines came across. Oh, it struck me in the temple, and the blood trickled down. I reeled and I staggered, and I fell to the ground. Come here, said our captain, come here with good speed, for I fear by this bullet young Dinsmore lies dead. Two men with a stretcher did quickly repair, and they carried me away to a hospital bed. Turned me all over, my wounds for to see. But if I had my Annie to bind all my wounds, one kiss from her sweet lips would soon deaden the stone. And it's when I am weary and think on lang syne, when I was a miner and wrought in the mine. Oh, the tears they do trickle, and down they do fall, like the roses that bloom around Bonnywood.
Robin Stapleton singing Bonnywood Hall, the ballad she sang at the Scottish Proms in the Park in Glasgow in 2014. And that recording was for the CD TMSA Young Trad Tour 2014. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is Steve Byrne, and in his ducat, our soon sorter, Richie Werner. Did you hear a voice there somewhere?
I think
there?
He stubbed his toe or something.
Tis a new year, new plans, new promises. Fits your New Year's resolution, Steve, or should we ask?
Well, I've written a couple down here.
Okay.
The first one says, tack me our time off.
Right.
That's probably one that my wife wrote.
Uh-huh.
I've actually thought I should sing a bit of mayor. I've had an awful long period where I've been busy with projects and
Mac and other folks sing.
Hi. So I thought I'm likely to go at that myself again. And the third one I wrote down was to get a bit of more sleep, but of course you can leave a burn on the horizon.
That's
so
that's out the window.
Yeah, the day before we start. So, fit about yourself.
Singing mare, is what you're saying. Again, like you, Mac and other folks sing, you can. And I'm going to learn to cook.
Aye.
It comes out, Abby kind of runs for cover. But I'm going to learn how to cook. And this is the year, you know, designated by Abadi that designates things. You can, you're waking up one morning and this is the year of flinging rabbits out to windies and things.
Aye.
And this is the year of food and drink. At last, I hear you cry.
Aye.
I can just hear Richie in the background saying, at last. We're awful pleased about this, as you can imagine. And say is 2014 Chef of the Year, Neil Forbes. And a giant Neil in the kitchen at his restaurant Café St Honoré on the Northwest Thistle Street Lane in Edinburgh to speak about Scots food and rumble through some of the old recipe books. And first, of course, to taste some Scots food. See what you can. Oh, that looks awful fine.
That's awful, brother. That's awfully good.
Right, better tell us what you're cooking here, though.
Well, it's Cullen skink, all the way from the northeast coast, of course, and it's just.
Can I taste a wee bit?
You can indeed. Aye. Off you go. A wee taste there. Mm. That's good. Is it no?
That's really good.
It's bra.
Right, fish in there.
It's tatties, of course. Good old leeks, an onion, and a good splash of cream, and some smoked haddock. Now you could, obviously, the haddock you could replace with a smoky, for a broth, that'd be good, for Ochmithy, but, you know, smoked haddocks are good, then, you know, it's just so hearty and wholesome.
My mum used to put in a wee tinny of carnation milk. That was a secret ingredient in it.
Oh, nice and rich.
I came from 5 miles for Cullen, of course. Mm. So
aye.
I should be able to make Cullen skink.
Uh-huh.
Neil, I'm here to enjoy your Cullen skink, to
indeed.
Be honest as
aye.
Well. But I'm here to find out about more about Scots cooking and Scots recipes and Scots food.
Aye.
Do we hae sic a thing as a Scots lager?
We do, aye. Of course, we have a fabulous selection of wonderful produce all over this wonderful country, from every nook and cranny, every glen, all the wee lochs and lochans and hills. We have it all, from, you know, the deer up in the hills to the trout in the streams. We've got it all, and you know we've been eating really well for centuries. And it's up to us to carry on these traditions.
You showed me a great big plate of, was it just oysters?
Oysters.
Now, fits the connection between, like we were speaking about the Scots palate. I thought oysters was a delicacy just for the well-to-do.
Well, it has. It's turned it on its head, really. Oysters are just an...
Great plate for you.
Look, they're just sensational. They're just so good. They're wholesome, full of zinc. And they'll, you know, you eat one of these a day, you'll live forever. I remember hearing a story once that the Royal Mile was built on oyster shells. Whether that's true or not, I'm not so sure. But beautiful, beautiful oysters from Loch Creen up by Oban, and they're just perfect this time of year. Absolutely the best that you can find. You know, I've heard people importing oysters. Why would you? Why would you? When we got the best here.
Well, you see, we for those coming up here to your restaurant, I was trying to think, are the Scots words and food, and I've got clootie dumpling.
Aye.
Do you make clootie dumplings?
We make clootie dumplings, but we also do a really good Christmas pudding, or plum duff, if you like, which is great. But I'm just looking through old recipes and dishes here in some of these old books, and, you know, oh, crikey, softies for Aberdeen,
and
good old baps and
Rowies.
Barley, aye. You know, good old porridge, you know, and mutton broths and part and breeze and crab soups and things.
I like that. And of course, I'm looking at some of the books you have here.
Some of the fabulous old books my dad gave me, aye. I mean, my dad...
He was a chef as
He was a chef as well, aye. So, you know, passing that through the family is just, you know, just incredible, really. What the book you're holding is one of the first copies of F. Marion McNeill's The Scots Kitchen, which is
1927. I've just looked at the date. 1927.
That's a long time ago. But interestingly enough, we're still doing these dishes the new at Café St. Honoré. Yeah, we're a French restaurant, but that old alliance, I suppose.
It's
France
still
and Scotland is still there.
Can
still
I read
strong.
A wee bit of the Marion McNeill's book, The Scots Kitchen? It says, just speaking about meal, we're speaking about barley meal, aye. Nothing. It says, the cronach stills the dowie hert, the jurum stills the bairnie. The music for a hundred wame is grinding o' the quernie. Of course, that's the quern, the flour, the grinding mill, you know, the quern still.
Yeah.
A fabulous thing.
And it's
see, poems are attached to food. So many quotations in
absolutely.
Food.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even vegetables, you know, come into it. You know, the diet. And a vegetable like kale. It's now been promoted as a superfood.
Across the word Welsh. Have you heard the word Welsh?
No.
It's sewer.
Is it sewer?
It's a bit sewer. It's a bit of Welsh, right?
You just swallowed a bee. And if you want it to be a bit more continental or a bit further afield, a Scots rabbit curry. and Meg Dodd's recipe.
What was Meg Dodd?
Now, Meg Dodds is almost one of these mystical, mysterious characters from history, which, you know, I don't even ken if she's existed or not, but immortalised by Sir Walter Scott in many a book, and is famous and renowned in the Peebles area in Inner Leithen as being a fabulous cook. And who would cook at the Cleekham Inn, would that be right?
Mm-hmm.
And so some fabulous old recipes there.
Scotch rabbit curry.
Rabbit, streaky bacon, onions, butter, flour, curry powder, mushroom powder, celery, optional of course, cocoa nut, optional, salt, cayenne and stock. And I'm sure that would be... wonderful.
Meg Dodd would have had cayenne pepper at that time.
Not so sure. Oh, another cracker here is sheep's head brawn. A sheep's head, bacon, pepper, and salt.
Glasgow tripe. No, I haven't heard of tripe for a long time.
I know, and it's delicious.
And it's Meg Dodd's recipe again.
I know. Tripe, knuckle of veal, pepper, salt, and water.
Aye.
Just fabulous. I like how the recipe has been sectioned off with a little bit of wool there. It's probably my mother that had that.
Mm-hmm.
To salt a Yule Mart or whole bullock, as you would do. Why wouldn't you? How would you know?
What a hell bullock, right?
As we anecdote at the bottom here, rock salt, called Liverpool salt in the northwest of Scotland and in Ireland because it comes from that port. The best of all salt for preserving meat or fish is what is called Bay or Lisbon salt. To it, anchovies partly owe their rich mellowness. Fabulous.
How did you get involved with food? Why are you such a fan of? I mean, you're not. You're a chef. You're chefing a year, Neil, and nothing. And you know, you got a great reputation. But it's your enthusiasm for local food that comes across. Where's that come from?
I think it comes from the hearth of the family fire. It really, genuinely does. I've just been a lover of all things Scots and food, and I have to, you know. So many wonderful memories of sitting on my granny's lap in front of the fire and the ceremony almost of the pot of broth which came out onto the table, and it was always at the table and it was always with bread and butter and the texture of the tablecloth, and there was the runner which was put underneath the tablecloth made out of spongy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's called. And the text, so when you put your cup or your plate, it left an imprint on the tablecloth.
Aye.
When you lifted it off. And the soup, the pot of soup, the broth, the brie, which was always bubbling away on the back of the stove. It was never not on.
Mm.
And that for me is just so inspirational. And nothing is like being a cook and a chef and feeding people where you get so much enjoyment and you can use all your emotion. And that's so important. The word care. You know, making that pot of soup and that hearty stew for you today is I'm using my hands and I shouldn't, but we're giving someone something which is so good and so nice and you're so proud of it. And with tradition, with integrity and with taste and with all your senses that went into making that dish, there's nothing like it in the world, so.
Thank you for all of this because bless I'm you. Just in my element here.
Oh, bless you. Great to see you, Frieda.
Award-winning chef Neil Forbes in his kitchen at Café St Honoré, Northwest Thistle Street Lane, Edinburgh. And fit a fine visit that was. Fine food, fine company, and mere to come, hopefully. You listen to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is Steve Byrne and our soon sorter Richie Werner. And they're fine company, I know, just in case they think I'm ignoring them. Steve, what's your favourite Scots dish?
I was saying, I think about that, I've probably got a wee short list, but one of the favourite things for my family is my mother Mac's stovies. And as you can, I'm vegetarian, so mm-hmm. I didn't hear the whole bit with the corned beef or the different ways that folk mark it, but it's just tatties, gravy, salt, and a bit of onion through it. Simple as you like, but I can't beat it.
Well, my mum was a renowned chef, which is probably why I never learned to cook, because I just wanted to eat what she was cooking and didn't just have a keen of what I was cooking. But of course, we had regional names for things.
Aye.
And you can do the white pudding thing.
Uh-huh.
They were called Mealy Jimmies, you see. So I mind starting in Dizzy Thompson's first, Doon and Dundee, in the big tune, as I thought, in a big city. And I went down to the fish and chip shop, of course, for some food. And I asked for a Mealy Jimmy supper. And there was a whole crowd of folks standing there. And you could just see their heads turning slowly round to look at me.
What is this?
Fuzzes. What did she just say? And I was trying frantically to try and remember Fadabdi Kad, of course, it was a white pudding supper.
Aye.
But I was just stood there, just beaming red with embarrassment. A Mealy Jimmy supper. But she made half a good Mealy Jimmy's. Music new. This is Rachel Newton. We up the lum through the album The Changeling. Shorts out your snorkers, I can tell you. That's up the lum for Rachel Newton from the album The Changeling. We were speaking earlier on, because as you may have heard, there's a wee tonner in Steve's voice. He's got a bit of a piocher. And we're trying to work out the difference between piochering and snorkering. I will not repeat fit was the answer that came from Steve Byrne. Right, it's being the start of the new year and the start of new plans, new sortings, red ups and red outs. Fits the difference?
Well, red up is kind of tidying your house up and red outs getting rid of a load of old things.
100%. Folk get that wrong all the time. Right. And I'm now going to engage the wisdom and the thoughts, scary as it may be at times, who are resident rumbler Steve Byrne. As I've said and have been heard to say on many occasions, let ilky man sweep the ice wi' his ain bosom. It's a weel Kent Pertnocky saying for New Year. Ilky man, Steve. Anyway, Steve, fits some of the notable traditions of the New Year, apart from sweeping the ice with your ain bosom. I thought there was a bosom was a wifey. You know,
well, it can be both. Bosom. It can be both.
You can sweep the ice with a bosom if she's on for
she's
it.
She's right? Saying clean, die. Mm. A few different things, I suppose. In my own family, half a simple thing that we do when it's hug my nae and the new year comes in after the bells, first thing we do is you open the window to let the algae root and let the new year in. Mm. some folk date with their front and back doors. Of course, you'll by this time folk will have had their Looney Duke, which the day on the 4th, of course, just at Edinburgh on New Year's Day, the Looney Duke going for a swim in
well-worded Looney Duke.
In the balmy temperatures of the winter. And interestingly, looking that up, found out that in the Netherlands they do the same thing, and they caught a duke. So you're a Looney Duker if you're in the Netherlands.
Well, we had Duke and Hatties and Duke and kind of Parif of Ellen Bernoggi as well. Well, we're right kitted out, we're Dukers and Duke and stuff.
Very good. Hansel Monday, you heard of that?
No.
Hansel Monday's the first Monday of the new year, and there's a bit in the Kiss the Riches archive for Betsy and Bryce White from Montrose speaking about the first person to basically Hansel is, you know, a bit of money. He would give you a Hansel in a new purse, or sometimes put a Hansel in the pram for a new bairn. Folk used to think that the first buddy that you got money for in the new year had to be a lucky buddy, or you'd no get any money for the whole year. So
first fitting is half a dodgy in some places.
It can be taking your life in your hands.
You can, a tall, dark stranger and all that kind of stuff.
Oh aye, and you can't come in without a hat on.
Fit what?
Oh, it just has to have a bonnet on. You can't come in bare headed.
The first I've heard, I ken some folk in some of the villages up north. They can, they've been waiting for folk to come in, tall dark strangers, for months. They've not seen Omdi for months.
Aye.
And they kind of barricade the door for Omdi else coming in.
Aye.
So they didn't come out for months.
Well, imagine if you were going the other way there and you forgot your hat, they wouldn't have let you in.
Suppose that. You ken about the coal and I think, though, do you?
Aye.
And you ken about why it had to be a tall dark stranger. I didn't want to be personal or anything, but you wouldn't have just be half a good for the tall dark stranger.
A bit peely wally, aye, even. Especially in the winter, in fact.
Aye. You're not just the right colour and stuff.
Or stature.
You'll be termed a Viking, you see. They didn't want folk your colour in because they 9 times out of 10 be Vikings and they ain't half a welcome. They're not good at parties, Vikings. Are just swinging about X's now?
Aye, well, I'm glad to say these days are horrendous.
I mind saying to somebody in my family, I said, from the command, you see, they swung about X's, so folk didn't like, can they chop at folk's heads off? And I remember my Uncle Sandy saying, well, in this house, folk come in with a head and they go out with a head.
It's funny what you're saying, actually, about the Vikings, because up in Stromness in Orkney, they would have a tug of war with an old boat and they would burn it afterwards. So
just a wee remnant of the real EastEnders came in to occupy folks' time, I would say. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Freda Morrison. With me is folklorist Steve Byrne. Need to mention their soon sorted Richie Werner, for I want to mention the programme again, but I'll mention him new because it's new here. And this is a track for a new album about to come out in the new year, Fate Malinky. Now, featuring our ain Steve Byrne. Steve, I'll let you introduce it.
It's a song that's sometimes called Camelin, which is a ferm just outside Fyvie, but we've called it Tarvis Parish.
In Aberdeenshire.
Indeed.
Tarvis Parish, that I come free, and to tell ye that I am some way. There's a long road that I mangy to the Fyvie lands in the morning. Horses for the drive. I'll come on the rise at 5 and call the fun in the morning. Began to creep. Uto his bed, he sprang to his feet. Cries, lush boys, rise for it's morning. To gather fan, he set me tea, which I began recanally. Took a look for the witty and the five lands in the morning. Selling the morning. I had no life.
Fiona Hunter and Steve Burns singing Tarvish Parish, Faye Malinke's new album card, Far Better Days. Congratulations there, Steve. That's Thanks. Sounding cracking. And Malinke is launching the new album this month. Farabouts?
At the Kelly Connections Festival in Glasgow.
Ray. No, we're back on the theme of food and drink, our favourite theme. 2015 being designated as the year of food and drink. Now, when I was up at the Living Food Festival at Cawdor Castle near Nairn, at the Aina last year, not only did I get treated to some fine Scottish fare, but I had the pleasure of meeting in with twa crofters fae Shetland and Orkney, fast company was as good as the lambs they produce. I eventually managed to entice them out of the marquee and up the road a bit to hae a blether with them about their special ways of looking after their livestock. In the background, you can hear the start of the ceilidh with music for the young Caledonian ceilidh band, music and food being happy together. But that's why I had to entice the twa crofters out of the tent a while for the music a wee bitty. I wouldn't like you to think I had different motivations for enticing them out of the tent sort of thing. So here they are, my companions for the ceilidh, nae easy to tether to begin with.
Gordon Byrne's going to be the hero anyway.
He's going to be the hero. Yeah. Right, Billy, give me your name again and where you're from.
I'm from Shetland.
Isn't that?
I'm Billy Muir from the Orkneys, and I live in the most northerly island in the Orkneys.
Right.
North Ronaldsay.
Could you come in about a wee bit? And your name?
I'm Ronnie Johnson, and I'm from Shetland.
Okay. We've got a grand going band in the background there, and we've just been watching Neil Forbes, Chef of the Year. You know that? He was Chef of the Year.
Goodness.
Preparing your lamb. Tell me about your lamb first of all, then.
Well, our lamb dates back 5,000 years, and it used to roam the whole island. We're only about 4 miles long by 2 miles wide, about 13 and a half miles around the perimeter. And away back in 1832, the crofters wanted rid of them off the fields and get them out on the shore. Well, that's not strictly true. The laird didn't want to lose the flock, so he made a deal with the crofters that they would get free use of the foreshore if they would build a dike around the perimeter. So they ended up building 13 and a half miles of dike to keep the sheep on the shore.
So how many sheep have you got now then?
They're about 2,500, maybe odd, on the shore.
Now, do you have to shear them as well, Billy?
We do indeed, with all hand shears.
Nothing electrical?
Well, we've tried that, but it doesn't work, because when you're at the beach, there's lots of sand that blows around, and it blows in the wool. It doesn't do very well with the electric clippers nowadays, no.
So what do they feed on doing in the beach? That's a tough question again, but
there is a very small amount of grass, but it's next to nothing, so it's the seaweed that they feed on. And dulls would be their favourite, so they're governed by the moon and the stars. They go and feed with the ebb tide. And they leave the feeding area about an hour before the tide turns. And then they come up and, well, of course, in winter, they peak, like Ronnie's ones will peak in the summer months when the grass is most lush and plentiful. But our ones will peak in November and December. And they're fattest then because they're more seaweed thrown ashore and they can eat more of it. So they are a unique flock, and they're a close flock, and the rams go...
There must be some of the oldest in Britain, then.
Be about the oldest. Yeah. I think we're 1 year older than the Shetland ones.
Ronnie's laughing. So do you kill them at 1 year old?
No, we never ever do that, no. We keep them to the 3, 4 or 5 year old.
But why is that, then?
To get the best... to attain the best size of carcass... Mm-hmm. You'll get anything for 14 to 20 odd kilos when they're that age. But we never ever kill a lamb the year it's born, or a hug.
A hug?
Never a hug either, no.
No, it's a hug?
It's a 1 year old. So it's well and truly mutton, so you have to cook it slow and long.
A specialised job, Ron, across the UNO. I'm just not going to start anymore because we've just been through a great demonstration. What's the difference between the Shetland lamb and what Billy's speaking about?
Well, the Shetland lamb is really grazing on everything from the tops of the hills, on the heather, right down to the shore. So it's still his access to a very diverse range of vegetation. And so it just shows you how adaptable the species is, that particular short-tailed northern sheep.
Just give us an idea just how different they are for the sort of sheep you were, or a bit of lamb that you would buy in Tesco's or Asda's or Morrison's.
Well, pretty much the lambs be coming in about half the weight of the type of lamb that we would find in a supermarket. It's a type of lamb that is nobody really wants it in a butcher shop in Scotland. No supermarkets really want them.
It's a specialised dish.
It's a specialised dish. It's but like all the native breeds, it's there for a reason. It evolved and developed to cope with a certain set of circumstances, and because it's a very natural type of sheep, it's no having to be assisted in any way by humans. It's a very healthy sheep. If you're a crofter or farmer up in the North Isles, you have no options but to look at doing things as efficiently as you can. You don't have the opportunity to play around with things. So what you do has to be seen in terms of keeping breeds that are appropriate to your circumstances. And the circumstances can be challenging, therefore you need the type of animal that can cope with that.
Billy, Ronnie, have a good time at the Cayley the Nicht. We'll see you later.
Okay, thanks very much.
And we had a really good time at the Cayley after. There's nothing I like better than Gweed company, and yon twa crofters fae Orkney and Shetland, I can tell you now, rank high amongst my favourite company. Need to say that I'm in bad company now. I'm in good company with Steve and Richie. I just want to mention that in case our noses are out of joint.
We've no got that many sheep on the house.
What's the problem, you see? Well, we can't go any further, Steve, without mentioning that we were amongst the crowd that said a very special fond farewell to one of our finest Scottish singers this week, Sheila Stewart, MBE. Sheila was a beacon of Licht, proud of her rich oral culture and traveller roots, a traveller, a singer and an author, part of the internationally renowned Stuarts of Blair, singing with her mum Belle, sister Cathy. Well, we joined the throng that gathered in the wee toon hall in Blairgowrie to celebrate her life with story, song and music. And we'll finish in a minute with Sheila singing one of our favourites at the Perton Glass. Steve, Sheila, the last in the line.
Aye, it's something she was ever conscious of herself. You know, making sure that she was passing it on, if not to directly to her family, but to other singers and younger singers. She was somebody that was ever interested in my experience of in other folk, and give a lot of time to folk to kind of learn songs and give them, as is often the phrase, the richt wild, in terms of this idea. This idea, the kind of the cognac, really getting yourself into the song and kind of experiencing it in a almost a kind of, you could say, cinematic kind of way of having the storyboard running in your head, and you really ken what you're singing about. And I think that the influence of Sheila and her family can't be understated. I mean, since they were discovered, if you like, by Maurice Fleming and then by Hamish Henderson, the Berryfields of Blair in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. They've really formed part of the bedrock of the hill folk revival that's gone on new into folk like Robin Stapleton that were able to king through, you know, and win competitions and learn these mm-hmm. songs at the skill. It completely changed days since, you know, 60, 70 years ago.
I first saw her sing We Are Mother Belle and her sister Cathy at the first Blairgowrie Folk Festival in 1967. I was a wee lassie. I was teen doing to the festival with my brother. And I've never forgotten that performance and their voices. Mm-hmm. As you say, the cognac was in there. It's the first time I'd kind of come across that. That could transport you into another time and another place.
Right.
It was magical. And a few years later, I had the honour of joining author and fellow traveller Jess Smith and Sheila on a day recording a programme for radio about the cant. He was mm-hmm. speaking about, you know, she was conscious that things were maybe not being able to survive, that she was the last in the line to kind of with the cant. That's the language of the travelling community. It was a language often used when they didn't want anybody to ken what they were saying. But fit of fun, Steve, we had that day up and among the berry fields of Blair and Doom of the River Erech, they ken. Well, a mine gun driving through Blair, and I was sitting in the back seat recording them speaking the cant. I was being kind of shuggled about face side to side because the driving was fitly raw. I can tell you, they were howling and laughing.
But that was the gift she had, you kind of, with dignity, presence, and of course, as I said there, a great deal of fun. And just like a wee bit about, you know, the accolades. In 1982, Sheila was chosen to sing for Pope John Paul II in Bella Houston Park in Glasgow in front of around 350,000 folk. In 1976, she sang for President Ford at the Bicentennial Celebrations in Washington, D.C. And her solo CD, From the Heart of the Tradition, came out in 2000. The book's biography of her mother, Queen Among the Heather, 2006, followed by a collection of traveller stories, Pilgrims of the Mist, 2008, and her own autobiography, A Traveller's Life, came out in 2011. Well, Margaret Bennett paid a bonny tribute to Sheila at the service, saying in simple words, "We were privileged to have met her." So we finish with this song we heard as part of that celebration of A Very Special Life, The Pert and Glass. So here we are, starting another rummel through another year, with a fond memory and a parting song as we look to the future. Join us again, we'll be here sorting out the soons of the Scots language. Folk, I say, far can you hear it? Well, you gang as far north, south, east and west as your lugs will tuck you. Fae Steve Byrne, Richie Werner, the Rummelers and the Soon Sorters. Fae me, Frieda Morrison, bye for now. And this is Sheila Stewart singing The Pert and Glass.
Oh, kind of friends and companions, come join me in rhyme. And lift up your voices in the chorus of mine. Let's drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may or might never all meet here again. Oh, now here is to the wee lass that I love so well, for style and for beauty there's none can excel. She smiles on me proudly as she sits on my knee, and there is none in this wide world as happy as me. So here is a health to the company, likewise to my lass. Let's drink and be merry, all out of one glass. Let's drink and be merry, all grief to refrain. For we may our light never all meet here again. Oh, my ship lies in harbour, she's ready to sail. God grant her a safe voyage without any gale. And if we should meet again, be it land or on sea, I will always remember your kindness to me. So here is a health to the company, likewise to my lass. Let's drink and be merry.